I'd like to welcome everybody to the Simple Actions Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is David, and I'm an alcoholic. This is fantastic. This is absolutely wonderful. This turnout is great. Thank you all for coming out tonight. If you weren't here before we said grace, let me thank everybody for bringing food to contribute to this. It takes everybody in the room to make something like this happen. Thank you to the people, the home group members who were here early, people who aren't home group members that came early and helped us set up the chairs and everything like that. Thank you all very much. So as I said, the Simple Actions Group meets at 7 o'clock in this room every Monday night. We typically go through the steps in order. Next Monday, we'd like to invite you all back. We'll be starting on step one. Takes us 13 weeks to go through the steps, and at the 14th week, then we have a little celebration, a supper and a speaker, which is where we are tonight. So now that we're all oriented in three dimensions. I also want to tell everybody, obviously you found them because we put them on the table. This is a weekend workshop, September 12th and 13th, Friday night and Saturday. It will be in this room. Valerie D. from Richmond and Cortland W. will be here to discuss the different topics Friday night and then again Saturday morning, and we'll adjourn early in the afternoon on Saturday. There'll be a potluck lunch on Saturday. That event also, like this one, completely free of charge, open to all. So having said all that, for those who care to join us, let's have a moment of silence to do with as you wish, followed by the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen. The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively, which are across the main foyer up a small flight of stairs. At this time, please silence your cell phones. I have to do that when I'm chairing because I pretend like I'm going to remember and then I'll forget and then mine will be the one that goes off. So, we respectfully ask those present to please refrain from unnecessary moving about the room while the speaker is speaking. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. The Simple Actions Group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book, Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA's simple actions. I'll now read the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. So I already kind of described the normal format as a step study, but tonight is a special night. We have a speaker. Will B. has come from Richmond, and he has a great story and a great message, and I won't take up any more of his time. Please help me welcome Will.
Oh my God, there's so many of you.
My name is Will, I'm an alcoholic. Hi everybody. Thank you for putting this on. Thank you, David, for asking me to speak. And thank you for anybody who has the fortitude to endure whatever joys I might bring your way tonight. Um, My pulse is about 90 right now. I don't normally get this nervous or anything at a talk of Alcoholics Anonymous. After all, when we're up here, we're talking about the subject we know best, which is ourselves. And all we have to do is tell the truth about ourselves, which isn't terribly hard to do. I'm going to give you the postage stamp version. Some of the details will be left out to protect the guilty and the innocent. But I'm very, very grateful to be here tonight. It's amazing. I like to start a meeting of this size by pointing out to anybody who's new, and by the way, welcome if you're new to Alcoholics Anonymous, that there are more people in this room by far than there were sober people on the planet using a 12-step method of any kind like this when they decided that they should put the message that we have in our big book before the world. That's astounding to me. And this is one meeting of many meetings that are going on just in this little city of Norfolk, you know, on a Monday night. And the Outlaw Safecrackers will be meeting in an hour up in Richmond, and that's where I usually go. My home group is the Jaywalkers group of Alcoholics Anonymous. Thank you for reading the book. We started that 16 years ago, and they haven't kicked us out of Bon Air Presbyterian yet. I just want to thank, and as an aside, this wonderful church for giving you such wonderful digs to have your meeting in. Oh, please protect it. Thank you. I have a sobriety day too. It's the 19th day of September, 1993. I hope I get to keep that because I don't think I'd get another one. It took me 17 years and a lot of heartache and the heartache of a lot of people whose lives I touched and smashed into to have that date. And I've been asking everybody all day to do what the Pope always asks, you know, please pray for me, please get me out of the way. My agenda, if there were one, is a better agenda than I've ever had, and that's to try to bring to you everything good about my life that I've experienced in 20 years, or even almost 50 years now, so that you can understand how really smart God is compared to how not smart maybe a lot of us are. I include myself in that crowd. And so I just pray that I just get out of the way and just say what needs to be said for the benefit of those who most need it. If you're new in Alcoholics Anonymous, as I said, welcome. There were some very, very gracious people who, no matter how I showed up, and this continued all through my recovery, kept showing up and welcome to me when I was new. And I will never forget those people. I remember them all by name. I remember them from the first morning that I was in Alcoholics Anonymous. It was 11 o'clock on a Sunday morning in 1993 in Stewart Circle Hospital on the 6th floor, and they met every Sunday. And when I called up the night before to Alcoholics Anonymous because I was done, the guy said, "Hi, my name's Chuck, how can I help you?" And I thought, I want to be like Chuck when I grow up. My immediate thought, I mean, all the spirituality is like coming through me so that I could be like Chuck and, you know, be like that vessel. I couldn't have put it to you that way, but that was probably the most selfless thought I'd ever had in my life, you know. And he told me where the meeting was, and I got off the phone really quick because there might be somebody behind me who might die if I whine into the phone, you know. I used to love to drink and dial. But I spared Chuck and whoever might have been behind me that night that joy too, and that was the other selfless thought that I had. So I'd already become like one of you before I was even here. See, my mother got sober in Alcoholics Anonymous when I was 11, before I ever took a drink, you know. And of course, anybody who's had an alcoholic parent who's been spared further rigor of that and watched their return to health probably has appreciated that on some level. But I never thought that I would become like her. But she kind of ruined my drinking before mine ever really got started. So, you know, when I started, you know, experiencing like more than just a few drinks, I was like, oh my God, this is going to have to end. I had thoughts of this is going to have to end soon when I was in the 7th grade. Anybody ever have, did anybody start trying to quit that early? I mean, I really, you know, because I had stuff to do. I mean, there was a lot of stuff to do. But I didn't stop. It would take me another 17 years to stop. And I, you know, so to get to Chuck, so that I could get to you and you could give me something that I didn't have, which was the gift of recovery. Anyway. Did I mention I'm from the Jay Walkers group? Yeah. We meet on Tuesday nights, so you can come tomorrow night if you're not doing anything. At 7 o'clock, we talk about what we read in the book, and we go through it ponderously, paragraph by paragraph. We don't do it like efficiently like you. We're still growing. And we also meet on Friday nights. It's a speaker meeting. It's an hour and a half, two 10-minute speakers and a long speaker. In the middle is a break where we can judge the two 10-minute speakers. Get them teed up and teed off. And we've been meeting in that church for 16 years, and we've done some growing. We started out horribly. We were mean, big book Nazis. We were just, you know, I'm surprised the GSO didn't write us a letter and say, cut it out. I am not kidding. And I was right in there with them, you know, because my default position is to just pick you apart. That's why alcohol worked so well, because I could forgive everything that you ever did. And I had great hope for the future when I had just the right amount of stuff on board. It was wonderful. That's why alcohol was my friend for so long, because I remained hopeful in that. And I think I turned my will and my life over to the care of alcohol and some of God's other accessories pretty much as soon as I started doing that. It was really super important, but I couldn't tell that to anybody. So there was my first conflict, right? Love it, can't tell you. Hey, Dean of Students, I'm much happier in geometry class if I can just have three shots of Jack Daniels before I have to endure George Cushman's lecture on, you know, acute angles or whatever they were talking about. I don't like geometry class, so I have to drink in order to endure geometry class or anything else. So really, I'm just a big baby when it comes to like dealing with reality. If there's access to something that's going to make the world look better and make you cooler, I'm going to do it, you know? And I was real ashamed of that, but, you know, you get the right amount of stuff on board and all that shame kind of goes away, doesn't it? The other thing that comes to mind, Don Priss used to tell this story. There are variations. A lot of you have heard it. It's the story of a three-year-old who wants to visit with his baby brother who just came home from the hospital, and everybody's pink and healthy, and his parents go, well, yeah, okay, let's go in the nursery and go visit with him. He's like, no, I want to visit with him alone. And they denied him the request for like 3 weeks because they thought, well, this is weird. But they finally relented. You know, he was eating his broccoli and he wasn't talking back. So they opened the door to the nursery and he goes, and they close the door behind him to give him his privacy. And he walks over to the crib, and he looks in and says, quick, tell me about God. I'm beginning to forget. And I think that's what, whether we know it or not, that's kind of what happens. That's why I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I couldn't have put it to you in those words. And I wasn't looking like God specifically. My first step was, if I continue to drink, I'm going to die, and I don't want to. Second conflict. Okay. I believe that there's something kind of okay here that I don't have, you know, sitting in my apartment in the fan in the holy city of Richmond, Virginia, where the war's not over yet, and you're in the only damn Yankee in the whole damn building. Take it to your sponsor. But that's what I was thinking. I mean, I was separated from everybody, and if I couldn't be with you, I had to judge you down, or just crawl under a rock, and alcohol gave me a safe oasis to do that. But I think that's why I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I think that's why I did a lot of things before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. Quick, give me something. I forget what it feels like to feel good. You know, I really got that when I was 12 years old. But after 17 years of trying to make that work, trying to go to college, trying to make friends, trying to keep girlfriends, trying to keep give, me, 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 I was dissipated enough to come to you. This wasn't my first visit, by the way. I drank my way out of college for the third and absolutely final time when I was 19 years old, and it was unconscionable after 6 weeks in a fancy treatment center in Wickenburg, Arizona, that I would ever drink again. I came to my mother's home group, met a lot of nice people. I met an old dude, he was like 40, and he offered to help me. And I was like, well, one of my old ideas is there's a generation gap in Alcoholics Anonymous, and clearly, you know, I like you, Jimmy, but, you know, I need somebody my age, hip, slick, and cool, who has what I want, who's going to teach me how to get what I want, which is one of half the population, because that's my agenda. And so I came here with a lot of old ideas, but I came here this time with, I didn't come as a tourist. I know what it's like to be a tourist in AA. I come where the nice people are, I come where the pretty girls are, I come where the better coffee is, just where it just feels comfortable for me. But I never, it's kind of like going to a restaurant and like looking at the menu and then like not ordering anything. And I walk out and I don't know why I'm still hungry. Just don't like the look of the place after about 6 weeks. But I watched my mom get sober in Alcoholics Anonymous, and she did these simple actions. And so there was nothing left of me by the time I was 28. In between 19 and 28, I had good jobs, bad jobs, nice girlfriends, crappy girlfriends. I was a terrible person. I just wanted what I wanted. The nicest people got in my life, kind of like the Lois Wilson and the Ann Smiths of the world, and they would last till like Tuesday because they knew what they had, and they didn't have to go to Al-Anon because they knew what they had. And the bosses were great, and they were gracious, and they let me down gently when they had to say, I don't think it's really working out. This may not be a good fit for you. You know, or I would have the temerity to just walk into their office and say, I don't think this is a good fit for me. I think the company would be better served if. Or, in an extreme moment, just leave, just go. I did that a lot. So Alcoholics Anonymous, by virtue of the fact that I knew that I had to be planted here, gave me a sense of commitment that I could grow where I was planted in this fellowship. And I've done that with varying degrees of success in 20 years. Did I tell you my sobriety date? Okay. 20 years, almost 21. One day at a time. So I got here because something was bigger than me here. That was my second step. The fact that you were talking about God didn't faze me a bit. I wasn't churched as a boy. I grew up in a forest of crosses in a village, which to this day is still 60% devout Catholic. But I watched the nuns come out of town hall pharmacy where they had the soda fountain where they ate lunch. And I know who they were, and they were big cadres of them, 15 or 20, and they were just smiling all the time. And they taught my friends how to read and write and do arithmetic. And I have fond memories of Plan Dome Road in Manhasset, New York, with the nunny bunnies walking down the street. I waved to them. I don't know whoever taught me to wave to people in religious orders, but for some reason I just kind of knew how to do that. Like I said, God's a lot smarter than I am. I had a lot of fun growing up. Went to camp. The camp's motto was the other fellow first. Yeah. Well, that was hard to live up to. God. 5 summers there and then 9 weeks on the kitchen crew with guys that I really couldn't relate to because I had a silver spoon in my mouth. So once again, I was out. I was over here, and then there's everybody else. I always felt like that. But I made $500 that summer. That's a lot of money in 1980 for a 15-year-old to be walking around with. I bought a lot of dope with that money. I couldn't wait to get back to New York City after I got paid and get what I needed. So I'd had enough of that. I'm powerless to do anything about my situation unless I got the right amount of stuff on board, and after 17 years that doesn't work, and I believe that there's something better here. And you say it's God, and you say this is the road to like finding a power greater than yourself, having a relationship with that power. I just had to get past the word fellowship, because that scares the crap out of somebody like me, because it means that I have to be around people and like hang in there for longer than I want to. My people, hi. Yeah. But you were the friendliest people on the planet, and as I said, you were very, very kind, and that was really important to me, because I always felt really scared when I went to the Piggly Wiggly or wherever. I mean, any place other than here, and I was just like, oh man, I gotta change my sweater, because this one, you know, then they're gonna know. Right? What do I do about this? It was all about, you know, trying to put up something that I know that you'd approve of. It's really exhausting, by the way, to live on that kind of fear. I don't know if you've ever had that experience. I got away with it as long as I could stand it, or as long as I thought I could get away with it, and as long as I thought I could stand it. The third step, as I said, I made a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of whatever is going to fix this by putting this stuff on board and smoking whatever's around and whatever. I didn't make a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God when I talked to Chuck that night. What I made a decision to do was to come to Alcoholics Anonymous and see what you got, because I knew it was better than what I had. So I was willing to put rubber on the road of the hope that I had placed in you in my heart, and you didn't let me down. You were kind, and you said outlandish things all over the room. And at the end, you'd say, keep coming back. And as a lot of us have talked about, there weren't a whole lot of people in my life who wanted me back anywhere if you'd known me for 20 minutes. The fellowship wasn't urgent in those days. About doing steps or, you know, taking simple actions or whatever. I don't know what all was being shared entirely, but I didn't remember people talking about sitting down and going through the big book. What I do remember is that, and looking back, I can see that God is a lot more merciful to people who are seeking that rather than just like doing stuff. Now, I don't know if that's a theological truth, but I think that spiritual curiosity can take most of us a long, long way. If we get in front of people who are genuinely interested in us, and I'm happy to say that I've become more interested in you, which is nice, that goes a long way. I think we're given a little bit of leeway here. So I was looking for an answer. After 5 months here, I didn't understand why the nine-step promises that we read, and which I could proclaim were coming true in my life without inventory, without amends, weren't happening anymore. And I couldn't understand why I was so edgy and frustrated all the time. That I wasn't, well, I guess it was a pink cloud, and that was had worn off. And you assured me that more will be revealed. But there wasn't anybody in the meetings when I would air this problem, because I went to a lot of problem meetings. I did. We went to problem. And does anybody have a topic? Yeah, I got a problem. I feel like crap. Oh, more will be revealed. Thanks. I'm waiting. Now it sounds like I'm slamming the fellowship, but I'm really not. But there are good ways to do things, there are better ways to do things, and there are ways that I need, and I can only share my experience, and that's what I'm trying to do tonight. And it was time to write inventory. And first my sponsor, without any further instruction, had me just read the prayer, the third step prayer, what's called the third step prayer, on page 63. And that's what I did. I got on my knees, which felt incredibly uncomfortable, all by myself, nobody around, really embarrassing. Right? I mean, you know, so the beginnings of the seeds of the revelation of self-centered fear, more will be revealed. This was my first revelation. I'm embarrassed and there's nobody around. But I, you know, just by virtue of the fact that I knew I needed direction, I knew I needed to move forward, if for no other reason than I wanted to be conversant in the meetings where people were talking about having done inventory. It wasn't that I was dying of alcoholism. I didn't know what that was. I just wanted to do something other than go to meetings and listen to people share war stories about how they drank and terrorized their families, and now that it's all better. Because, you know, that's not how it was going for me. It didn't go from war stories to, hey, it's all better. So I wrote this really kind of half-baked inventory, but because I was sincere in everything that I wrote down, even though it wasn't complete a la the big book, you know, it was complete as best as I could do. It was basically a confession of my life, all those resentments, I'm hurt, threatened, and interfered with. And what I got to see was, I am really resentful. That was the revelation of that inventory. Fear wouldn't show up in really, the fact that my whole life was just driven by fear, it didn't even show up on the radar until I was like 5 or 6 years sober. It was kind of like somebody said, it's like water unto the fish. And it's like, you ask a fish where the water is, what are you talking about? Well, I don't understand. It's just where I live, man. And then once I saw stuff more and more, I couldn't get rid of it. I entered into that phase where it said, we were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings, and I did exactly what I intellectually knew not to do, was to go to battle with what's wrong with me. You know, what's, and then I was like in years still battling with, well, if I could change this, I wouldn't need God, and yet I'm asking God and he doesn't seem to be doing much about it, and I can't seem to act as if long enough to get a foothold in the virtues that kind of are the opposite of the defects. And I was just a mess, and every year I was more edgy and more judgmental, and I would get in front of the nicest people and I would just cut you to the quick, as my, you know, Irish grandmother used to say, cut you to the quick. You know, because I'm not this kind of a guy. I'm the kind of Irish drunk where you fight till you win or fight till you die with words. And I always lost, and I lost immediately because you'd walk away. I mean, how can you vanquish the enemy if they're leaving? You did exactly what I did with all my employment opportunity. Left. What? Come back here. You know, so I couldn't win. And I knew that this was wrong. I knew this was a pattern for me. I saw it in the inventory. Please, God, help me to be kind and gentle and all those things and all that stuff that the Boy Scouts teach you and all this stuff. And I just couldn't do it. I don't know. And I began to despair. But I couldn't tell anybody in Alcoholics Anonymous that I was despairing. So I just kind of walked around being consummately in service, always having a general service position, moving up or down the ranks, depending upon how you look at the triangle, and just doing all the stuff, just working my butt off in Alcoholics Anonymous, trying to get more spiritual, but I was still not the version of Will Beebe that I wanted to be. Then some stuff happened that kind of made my life crash and burn in a really like serious way. It was an immense kind of awry. But if I'm going to tell you one more time that God's really smart, I really need to mean it. And I'm really happy to say that he is. Because the worst thing that ever happened to me wasn't the fact that my father died or my first sponsor drank or that she left and then another one left and this job didn't work out or anything like that. The toughest thing that ever happened to me was the realization is that I'm absolutely powerless in the face of certain circumstances. Is that my liberties would literally be taken away when I enjoyed so much of the world and now it's going to be gone. And before my life gets snuffed out, it's going to get really dicey at best. And all of those things that you see on television, or that I saw on television, were going to happen to me. And I was in more fear than I'd ever been in my entire life. And I didn't know what to do with all that. And faith is something that grows with practice. All these principles that we have are things that grow with practice. And I was practicing as best as I knew how, and I was being accountable to my sponsor and all this stuff, and I was going to the detox, Westcare, and not, you know, giving them the pitch and calling to the specific group and da da da. And I just couldn't do it anymore. I was like, I'm too sick for Alcoholics Anonymous was my new old idea. I'm too sick for Alcoholics Anonymous was my new old idea. Anyway, got through that firestorm of circumstance through the criminal justice system of 12 years of sobriety. And during that time, I've gotten in front of another kind gentleman who, not an AA member, but he sort of guided my spiritual reading for a little while, and he had me do some stuff and consider some things and help me with my prayer life and so forth. And it didn't transform me. It just gave me, you know, some new, really groovy ideas about what God had to do with a Monday night, for example. And the application, I think, of spiritual principles in my life has been kind of like this: you plant the oak, acorn or whatever, and it's like a really slow-growing oak. I'm just really stupid when it comes to like growing spiritually or something. I don't know what it is, and I'm not saying that to beat myself up or to denigrate the program or anything like that. But I was given the grace to get in front of some people who really, really could kind of hang in there and ask me some questions, like, Will, do you have hope? Nobody had ever asked me that question before. And I was sitting there in confession one day with Monsignor Wayne. He's like, Will, do you have hope? Before you finish with your litany of crap for the week, do you have hope? He was really good at stopping you, like in the middle of your sins. And like, do you have hope? And I, you know, if you're going to get in front of a Monsignor priest, you might as well tell the truth, right? Or anybody else for that matter. But I said, no, Father, I know. He said, I know. Continue. And I went through the rest of my stuff. And he said, for your penance, I want you to pray for hope. Now, I don't know if this is going to make sense to anybody, but have you ever resisted something that you know is really good for you? I'm sitting there like 15, 16 years of sobriety going, I'm not going to be doing that. Pray for hope. A very simple request, simple action, right? Pray. Express even a willingness to believe in a power greater than yourselves, we say to the newcomer in chapter 4. You know, just express, you know, pray for hope. There was something about that that just was just like the devil or whatever, it had me by the cojones, and I'm not doing that. I didn't tell him I wasn't going to do that. It was the lie that I told Monsignor Lane that day. I'm not going to say, okay, when I leave here, I'm not going to follow your directions. But about 3-4 days later, after my head spun around a little bit more and I got tired of me, there was evidently somebody praying for me, because I had that little moment of like, okay, I'm going to do this. And I got down on my knees. I was actually in my house, and there was no embarrassment, of course. And I got on my knees, and I said very sort of flippantly to God, as I might say flippantly to anybody who's close to me who can handle flippancy. And I said, God, if I don't know if you're like listening to any of this or if you care anymore, maybe you cared once, maybe not, I don't know, but I've been in despair, and Monsignor Lane, who I know loves me, has asked me to pray for hope. So I'm asking you, could you send some of that my way? Amen. Thank you. I mean, it was very George Carlin, you know, it was like, duh, okay. And God didn't come out of the sky and say, okay. He does what he always does. He remains invisible. And in the invisible and the silence of that moment, I had absolutely zero effect. Until about 3 days later, I felt the presence of hope, and I had this overwhelming sense that I was absolutely loved. And I have never had a day where I felt so hopeless like that ever again. So if you're in a place where you're not quite sure, all right, maybe follow the directions and express a willingness once again. Just try it. Because I don't think it... If they talk about the flimsy reed. You know, the flimsy reed, and it turns out to be, you know, something much bigger, this great big thing that we can climb on. We stood at the turning point. We asked his protection and care with complete abandon. There was nothing particularly holy about that moment in my mind. But remember what my mind is capable of doing. Not much. My mind is capable of saying, I will never drink again. It's absolutely unconscionable. And 6 weeks later, my best friend is speaking in an AA meeting. I'm 20 years old. It's mid-February 1985. And I get up to go to the bathroom. I take a left-hand turn out to my car and start drinking vodka 5 minutes later. That's what my mind is capable of doing. My mind is perfectly capable of not growing where I'm planted. And if I'm uncomfortable at 8 years of sobriety, I move to Las Vegas, Nevada, because they don't know me out there. And 3 weeks after I got to Las Vegas, Nevada, they knew exactly who I was. This was not good news. All right, so I love God today because he lets me do whatever the hell I want to until I realize whom I need. I need him, and I need him through you. If you're new, this really is simple, okay? There's nobody to play with except you and me and God. First step, me. Second step, God. Third step, you. Four and five, me. Six and seven, God. Eight and nine, you. 10, me. 11, God. 12, you. David and I were talking. We had a nice chat. He was kind enough to call me today. He always calls me when I'm, you know, way up here. And we had a nice chat. He's one of those guys I just love in AA, like so many. You know, we just level the playing field in 30 seconds. How you doing? Pretty crappy. How you doing? Pretty crappy, dude. But, you know, God's in his heaven. All's well with the world. We're helping people. We were talking about distractions. I don't know if anybody here has ever been distracted by something other than God. But I have a propensity to be distracted by things other than things that are holy. Things that are selfless. Things that are spiritual in their nature. I have a tendency to go for what looks good right now. Not so much as I used to, because I've been beaten into a state of reasonableness by the folly of my own life. So I think I've grown up a little bit. But it wasn't always like that. I don't know if you can relate. Out of sight, out of mind. That was a really good principle until that didn't work anymore. If you can see it and it's good for me too. Another old idea. Little note on the first will be last will be first. I really cherished the fact that I was always picked last on every team I was ever on as a kid. Not because I was a total spaz, but because I was just a total spaz. You know, blanket spazness. I don't think that I would have handled attaboys all that well. I had them in my musical life, and that's the only place I got them. And it's the place where I had the most solace. I was able to play Scott Joplin rags like a professional. When I was 9 years old, people would come into the club and, oh my God, it's just a little kid. And alcoholism took all that away, and then I had nothing except how I felt. Alcoholics Anonymous has taught me it's not so much about how we're feeling, it's kind of what we're doing. But if all I do is just go for it. And this is just my experience, okay? If it's just a program of action, then God is completely irrelevant. It's just a behavior modification program. And maybe for some people that would work. But I have to have like a program of action that has some authority attached to it. I need to have something like a compass that actually goes someplace. I don't know where it's going to go, but I need to know that it goes someplace and to maintain that level of hope that was instilled in me as a result of all these prayers that we do and was re-upped in me a few years ago. I need to know, like Bill talks about, we have a way out and a way of living that really goes someplace. He doesn't say where it goes. It really goes someplace. I got to go someplace today. I got to visit with you. I mean, I'm not supposed to be visiting with anybody. I'm supposed to be like 12 feet below where my head is. Lest I become heavy-handed about the spiritual life. They talk about the mind of the alcoholic. My alcoholism doesn't reside in the fact that I'm afraid of you when I'm sober. It doesn't reside in the fact that I am lazy or whatever defects I got up and running today with that big pile on starting with pride. You know, they can pile on pretty quickly. It doesn't exist in the actions that I took for so long in Alcoholics Anonymous didn't stop working because the actions don't work. They stopped working because I had no idea that there was any kind of benevolent authority to which I was being led. Somebody said, you hear it all the time, the master points to the moon and the fool points to the stairs of his master's finger. You know? In other words, I had to sort of reconsider, you know, what all this had to do with anything. If any of you has ever gotten to a place in sobriety, whether it's 5 days, 5 years, or 5 decades, saying, is this all there is? It's not. But to get through those times without getting distracted by something that is kind of short term. I love working with new people. It's one of my favorite things in life. As a matter of fact, I got a couple of new guys now who are running into, and David and I talked about this earlier, who are just running into that lack of momentum. And it occurred to me as I was driving down here, I didn't get the kind of answer that I wanted from David earlier, but I didn't come up with anyone either. And then in the silence that Joe and I shared coming down here listening to the Grateful Dead, it occurred to me that it's not up to me to the extent that I guide these men. All I can do is truly just share my experience, share my concern when I am concerned, as my father did, and not have to bludgeon them into the dictator's style of sponsorship or whatever. I've never been good at it, and I've never responded to it. My sponsors just let me run amok, just like my God did, until I could say, "Uncle, okay, enough." And it really is wonderful. As I get older, I don't like to do things that exhaust me. I like to have that energy that the Big Book talks about. We don't tire so easily if we're not burning up energy foolishly as we did when we were trying to arrange life to suit ourselves. And it's so important that I understand the difference between what is and is not my business. And it really takes the weight off of an old guy not to have to beat you into a state of reasonableness about what I think you should do. I've taken my lumps, and that's the only way that I was going to get closer to God, quite frankly. And I've read about legions, and I've heard stories all through AA and not in AA, legions of stories about that's kind of how that happens. It doesn't have to be that way, but it kind of tends to be that way for me. And if that's the way that I have to grow, then that's the way I have to grow. So I'm not so afraid of adversity anymore. So as a matter of fact, I'm not afraid of adversity at all. So if you guys got anything to contend with me with, bring it on. I'll just back off and probably do what the rest of you did. I'll just walk away. No. I love you, and I want to be able to show this. My fondest prayer is that, A, I never have to drink again. Number two, that I can be as helpful as I possibly can to whomever might want or need this program. And those four reasons for doing it that Dr. Bob put in his story are exactly my experience. I never thought that I would say that I'm grateful for every adverse circumstance I've ever experienced in my life, but I can tell you with absolute certainty that had they not happened, I wouldn't have the relationship with the power that I understand to be God as strongly as I do. So I never thought that I'd say that I'm grateful for all that stuff, but I will say tentatively, I kind of am. If you'd asked me that 5 years ago, I'd have been like, go screw yourself. I really would have been, you know, it wouldn't have been the right question to ask. You're going to be able to help somebody with this someday. Yeah. It's nice to see some people down here whom I got sober with. Sammy was here when I got here. I remember her when she was still drinking. That was funny. And I think you're the only person that I know in these rooms that I remember when you were still out there. So it's really good to see you. I love you. Thank you for coming down. And for all the people that I hope to meet later, God bless you. I miss you already. I'm a very romantic person. I'm already reminiscing this as I'm speaking. May you grow in understanding and effectiveness. May the unity of this group and all the groups that you visit cohere as beautifully as ether. May the light of God shine through you and into the lives of other people by clearing away the moss and the gook that's covering you. Because, you know, I don't think that we need to add anything to us. We just need to strip away the things that are not us. And that's pretty cool. It's a lot less work, too. It's a lot less work. And none of us has to be special. That's the beauty part. Last thing I'll just say, I can walk around any corner in this wide world and not be afraid of whom I might find there. And that's real freedom. I used to get liberty and freedom confused. It seems to me, and I'm saying this as a curmudgeon alcoholic, we live in a world where doing whatever we want, we should be able to do it and be happy at the same time. And I don't think that that works for me very well. I find that not being hemmed in, but given a solution that is, on the face of it, rather narrow, opens up my heart and my mind in a way that I never had before. And I get to impart that a little bit at a time in ways that I never thought I'd be able to do. That's incredible to me. I'm a happy member of my home group. I'm not always happy with the group. But that's usually on days when I'm not happy with me. You've taught me how to 10-step effectively and to set things right as they go along and to be an effective member of this fellowship. I know I've probably left out all kinds of things.
I wish I'd said this.
Who cares? Nobody's going to remember this in 3 days anyway. I love you very much. God bless you. Thank you.
We going to pass the baskets? Thank you, Will. That was great. The baskets that are going around are in support of the seventh tradition. The seventh tradition states that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential that every level of AA service is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district, area, and general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose to help the alcoholic who still suffers. The amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world. Are there any announcements for the good of AA? Alfred. Hey, Alfred. Any other announcements? Go, Ryan, nice and loud. August 30th. A brunch of speakers. Come on, that's funny. Any? Debbie. Any other announcements for the good of AA? All right. Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting, home group members. See everybody? All right. And when we break down, we could use some help. All these tables will get picked up and the chairs will get stacked and the people that had their hand raised can point you in the right direction. Any help you can give us would be appreciated after cleaning up. Is there anybody in the room in their first 30 days of sobriety? We don't want to put you on the spot. We would just like to welcome you. Anybody in their first 30 days? If you're comfortable, could we just get your first name?
I'm David.
Hi, David. Welcome.
I'm Beth.
Welcome. Anybody else?
I'm Randy. I'm an
alcoholic. Randy, welcome. Charles, welcome. All right, that's awesome. That's why we're here. There is literature available. If you can fold it, it's free. The books have a nominal cost. Just see a home group member if you need a book. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship in AA, who's going to be up at the table? Catherine and Jason. Those two, a man and a woman, will be up here. If you have any questions about sponsorship or you just want to, I don't know, talk about anything you want to talk about. But grab somebody. If you're interested in sponsorship or just have questions about it, we can help you with that, okay? Can we thank Will again one more time? I think we're done. Shall we pray?
Hey, what's going on? Connected. Harmony, would you lead us?